Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rishalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
Hello everyone, I'm your host Tanner, and this is the Monster Legends Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about the monsters of Colorado. But first things first, let's talk about the state. And this article I'm reading from is from history.com, and it's published on November 9th, 2009, but updated on October 21st, 2018. Colorado, which joined the Union as the 38th state in 1876, is America's 8th largest state in terms of land mass. Located in the Rocky Mountains regions of the western United States, the state's abundant and varied natural resources attracted the ancient Pueblo peoples and later the Plains Indians. First explored by Europeans in the late 1500s, the Spanish referred to the region as Colorado for its red-colored earth. The area was ceded to the United States in 1848 with the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that ended the Mexican-American War, which lasted between 1846 and 48. In 1858, discovery of gold in Colorado affected new settlers. During the Plains Indian War, which was between 1860s and 1880s, Colorado's wild frontier was a scene of intense fighting between Native Americans and white settlers. In the 21st century, Colorado continued to rely on its natural resources as well as agriculture and tourism to sustain its economy. Did you know, in 1972, Colorado rejected the International Olympic Committee's invitation to serve as host for the 1976 Winter Olympic Games because its voters opposed the use of state tax revenue to finance the games. It is the only state ever to reject an Olympic invitation to host the event. The capital of Colorado is Denver. It has a population of 5,029,196, according to a 2010 census. The size of Colorado is 104,094 square miles. The names for Colorado are Sentinel State and Colorful Colorado. The state motto is Mil Sin Numan, which means nothing without the deity. The state tree is the Colorado Blue Spruce. The state flower is the white and lavender columbine. The state bird is the lark bunting. Listening facts of Colorado. Mesa Verde National Park contains more than 4,000 agricultural sites, including around 600 cliff dwellings from the ancestral Pueblans who inhabit the area from about AD 1250 to 1300. By the late 13th century, they began to migrate south to New Mexico and Arizona, where they are still continuing to live today. Discovered by Lieutenant Zebulon Pike in 1806 during an expedition to turn the southwestern boundary of the Louisiana Purchase, Pike's Peak becomes a landmark to the thousands of fortune hunters who traveled west with the storage with the slogan Pike's Peak or Bust on their wagons after gold was found in the area in 1858. On November 29th, 1864, more than 100 peaceful Cheyenne and Arapaho Indians, believing themselves to be under the protection of the U.S. government, were slaughtered by close to 700 Colorado volunteer soldiers under command of Colonel John Shivington. The atrocity devastated the tribes and served as a catalyst for years of subsequent warfare between Native American Indians and the U.S. Army. The lyrics to America the Beautiful were written by Catherine Lee Bates after an awe-inspiring trip to the top of Pike's Peak in 1893. Although it is now commonly sung to the tune Mountaineer? I don't know. Composed by Samuel Ward in 1882, the patriotic poem was often sung to Auld Lang Syne in the early 20th century. Colorado Rockies are part of the North American Cordilleras, which lead the western part of the continent, all the way from Alaska to northern Mexico. With 58 named peaks over 14,000 feet and an average altitude of 6,800 feet, Colorado has the highest elevation of all states. If you want to submit your stories or keep updated on upcoming episodes, join the Monster Legends Podcast Facebook group or follow on Twitter at MonsterLegendsP. Also, if you want to use your email, you may send it to MonsterLegendsPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. Hello. I'll take a little break. I just want to let you guys know that you can find the Monster Legends Podcast on several platforms, including Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Procast, and Radio Public. So if you're not sure which one to get, just getting one of those would be great. Or not sure where to find it, that's where you can find them. Thank you. Let me take a breath. Whew, that's what's going on, guys. I'll bring up the next article. Man, so much turkey today, this week. To tell stories, some creepy stories I found on 10 Chilling Stories and Urban Legends That Prove Colorado is the Creepiest State by Linda Radford. While there are creepy urban legends all over the world, Colorado's ghost stories and myths hold a legendary status. Thanks to Stephen King, the Sentinel State is home to the Stanley Motel, where King stayed in a room 217 and saw an apparition that served as the inspiration for his book, The Shining. Colorado also harbors legends about skinwalkers, phantom automobiles, and even the gateway to hell just outside the crumbled ruins of a haunted mansion. Many spine-chilling ghost stories emerge from the haunting of the Lee property, which is one of the most famous hauntings in America. There's also an abundance of local lore surrounding the infamous Highway 666. This list is a collection of some of the most famous urban legends and ghost stories circulating throughout creepy Colorado. The Black Forest Haunting. In 1990, Steve Lee moved his family into a log cabin home in the Black Forest regions of Northern Colorado. They rented it for a year before purchasing it, but once the land was theirs, things started getting weird. Initially, lights and electric devices kept turning off and on, and eerie noises sometimes filled the air. But things got worse when the children began seeing shadowy figures lurking in the woods. This was followed by a strange odor that wafted throughout the cabin that turned burned the family's throats and eyes. Thinking it was pranksters, the Lee family installed motion detectors and cameras. However, the motion detectors would go off when nothing seemed to be happening on the camera. Eventually, the Lee property tallied up 62 alleged break-ins. Though not a single one of them could be explained and nothing was missing, Steve Lee added more cameras capturing more unexplainable phenomena like orbs, beams of light, and sometimes ghostly forms with faces. Lee's could no longer pretend the cameras were the problem, and they contacted the television show Sightings to document what became one of the most famous hauntings in America. The science crew experienced and captured quite a bit of phenomenon themselves. Cameras were knocked off tripods, one of their pictures experienced an attempted possession, and a medium workings with them determined there were multiple spirits in the house and their roots in space-time on the property. Okay. The psychic also identified one of the spirits as someone that the Lees knew, son of a friend everyone believed died of an overdose. His spirit allegedly told the medium that he was actually murdered. The Stanley Hotel inspired The Shining. One of the most famous haunts of Colorado is the Stanley Hotel. The Stanley, which served as the basis for Stephen King's The Shining, is over a century old and is home to countless ghost sightings and unexplainable events. One of these ghosts is a former owner of the hotel, Lord Dunraven.
Whew, your breath is hot in here.
Okay. Multiple witnesses have seen a face peering out of the window of his room, room 407, which when it wasn't occupied. One of the witnesses staying in the room reported that a light kept turning off and on. Allegedly, the ghost acknowledged the ghost assured him that they'd only be staying 2 days and asked him to keep the lights on. The spirit left the light alone after that, but proceeded to spend the rest of the night noisily playing around with the elevator just outside the door. Rooms 217, 401, and 418 have unusually high reports of paranormal activity. Cleaning crews tell of strange noises and seeing impressions on the bed when the rooms are empty. Guests in room 418 report the sounds of children playing in the hall. When those reports come in, there are no children checked into the hotel.
Creepy ghost kid.
Okay, ghosts along the Riverdale Road. Riverdale Road runs through Thornton, Colorado, and is lined with creepy cottonwood trees where you can allegedly see the hanging bodies of slaves by the light of the full moon. A phantom Camaro with one working headlight can also be spotted driving down this stretch of road. According to legend, there were a bad car accident in Semis where the driver died. He still speeds down Riverdale Road, looking to challenge late-night travelers in a race to their death.
Yo, dude, what's up?
Riverdale Road also has its own Lady in White legend. The story starts with a young woman wandering the streets alone at night, looking for anyone willing to give her a ride. However, unlike most hitchhiker legends, this young lady disappears before ever getting into the car, leaving the stunned driver to sit in their own confusion. Another story warns drivers about a young boy who was killed by a car on his way to school. The spirit walks the Riverdale Road at night, smearing bloody handprints on street signs as he passes. The ghost of Joggers Hill. Further down Riverdale Road, you come to a dirt path at the crest of a hill known as Joggers Hill. The legend states that a jogger suffered a hit and run when the driver raced off in a panic, leaving him or her to die alone. Now the jogger lurks as a shadowy menace in the area, terrorizing any drivers who stop atop the hill.
You'd be a dick, man. Because one guy can fuck the asshole. You're gonna miss everybody.
Paranormal activity in the Hotel Colorado. The guests at the Hotel Colorado are often awoken at night by strange sounds and flickering lights. Some are plagued by sightings of a little girl with a ball wearing a Victorian-era dress, while others recount how their personal items were moved around or missing. Both bell towers suites are superbly haunted, and the elevator seems to have a mind of its own at times. Stories tell of a female presence that has a habit of watching male guests as they sleep and of an abundance of strange odors wafting throughout the hotel without any discernible source. The screams of a woman can often be heard throughout the hotel, believing to belong to a deceased chambermaid. According to the lore, she was involved in a love triangle which ended with one of her lovers murdering her in one of the guest rooms. Her former room has been turned into a storage because the paranormal activity within this room has too intense to remain open to the public. The gates of hell lead to a mansion of fire and death. According to local legends, the gates of hell lie near Riverdale Road in Thornton, Colorado. Rumor has it that this stretch of road leads to rusty iron gates that open to a place of satanic worship and human sacrifices. Behind these gates also rest the charred ruins of an old mansion, a haunted tree, and a chicken coop that leads directly to hell.
Okay, so chicken coop. Weird.
A mansion. The mansion was built by David Wolpert during the Gold Rush. He married and had children, two of whom were deaf and mute. Legend has it that he was provoked by demons to murder his entire family and burn the house to the ground. People say they can still hear the screams echoing throughout the night. One of the looming iron gates in Wolpert's chicken coop were left standing after the fire. They say that the eerie gates serve as a warning to stay away from the hellish madness surrounding the area. While the chicken coop is allegedly where demons commit Wolpert to commit the murders. Hold on a second. Beware the drums of Third Bridge. The Third Bridge, also known as the Ghost Bridge, is located out in a prairie in the middle of nowhere and crosses over Kiowa Creek. The hauntings of this area began
the massacre of Native Americans. According to the legend, you can hear their drum beats, their drums beating from a distance, and the longer you stand on the bridge, the louder the drumming gets. Some even claim to have heard the pounding of hooves across the bridge at night, driving along the Devil's Highway, Route 666. Infamous Route 666, nicknamed the Devil's Highway, runs through four states, one of which is Colorado. It was renumbered as Route 491 in 2003 in hopes of dispelling the fear surrounding demonic numbers. However, changing the numbers didn't take away the unexplainable phenomenon that occurred, and is still occurring on this cursed road. Admittedly, the accidents rate has significantly decreased since the remaining. When it was still known as Route 666, this stretch of highway had an unusually high accident rate. People driving along the Devil's Highway have reported creepy incidents, such as a black phantom sedan that follows dangerously close no matter how high the speed. Many have pulled over only to realize there's no car behind them. There are also tales of a pack of hellhounds that terrorize innocent travelers. The beast somehow managed to keep up with their vehicle, regardless of how fast or recklessly the driver maneuvers the car. Many believe these hellhounds are responsible for shredding tires and causing terrible wrecks. Some have even claimed that the beasts are capable of jumping into the windows and mauling people. The Skinwalkers of the Four Corners. Colorado is rich with legends of Native American culture, one of which is about the Skinwalkers. The Navajo have passed down stories of those able to shapeshift to different animals. Local lore describes a coyote with the eyes of a man that runs alongside cars, hidden hood while transforming into a man that has the glowing yellow eyes of an animal. As terrifying and aggressive as that sounds, there are many who insist a skinwalker's appearance outside of a car should be taken as a warning to not continue down the road. If the traveler ignores that warning, an evil shaman will appear in the backseat of the car and cause an accident. The Ridge Home Asylum. The Ridge Home Asylum was operated from 1912 to 1991, serving the mentally disabled of all ages. Allegedly, the patients were kept drugged and some were severely beaten. One staff member was arrested for abusing patients and bragging about it to friends. Even during its operational years, the asylum was believed to be haunted. Patients and staff reported strange noises, apparitions, laughter, children running down the halls, and objects moving on their own. Yeah, it's that one. Okay. Also, the mental institutions closed its doors. Local youths considered breaking into the abandoned asylum a rite of passage. The Ridge Home was certainly creepy enough when it closed. All the equipment, toys, and old furnishings were left behind. The building was demolished in 2004, replaced by a Super Target. Replaced by Target. Wow. Which is supposedly haunted by ghostly phenomenon. Damn, a haunted Target. That sucks. God. Okay. If you want to submit your stories or keep updated on upcoming episodes, join the Monster Legends Podcast Facebook group or follow on Twitter at Monster Legends P. Also, if you want to use your email, you may send it to monsterlegendspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. Hello. I'll take a little break. I just want to let you guys know that you can find the Monster Legends Podcast on several platforms, including Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Procast, and Radio Public. So if you're not sure which one to get, just getting one of those would be great. Or not sure where to find it, that's where you can find them. Thank you. Okay, this next one. This next article. Beyond Twilight, Self-Proclaimed Vampires Lurk in Colorado by Amy Heckle, November 17, 2011. When Sapie Schultz needs to feed, she often goes to a nightclub. The Church Endeavor has a lot of energy, she says. She also likes the milk bar or tracks. You should feel the energy in it there, she says, especially during 80s night. It's the strings and human emotions that attract her, not another vampires around Colorado. But Schultz is looking for ambient injury, not blood. Though she has consumed it with the permission of the donor, chalk that up as a misconception. Number one, about real life vamps. Schultz will attack you in the dark alley and suck you dry. Here's another, Schultz. This is not some delusional teenage Hot Topic shopper obsessed with Twilight. She's 40, with a steady job, graduate magna cum laude with a double major, has a passion for social justice, is as bad as a vampire since 1989, long before the Collins sparked the most recent vampire hype. Schultz of Westminster doesn't plan on catching Breaking Dawn Part 1, the latest installment in the Hot Book and movie series. When it opens in theaters tonight, don't get her wrong, she finds HBO's True Blood and the BBC's being human amusing, just like any good fiction. She's not going because she doesn't like how Twilight portrays relationships, glamorizing a trolling man or a vampire and an empty shell of a woman who has no desire to be anything other than someone else's accent piece. Okay, so back to the elephant in the room. Yes, Schultz says is a vampire. So do at least three dozens other local residents and thousands nationwide, according to vampire research firm. Yes, this exists to Suchiatio Enterprises, the Colorado Vampire Association. The Colorado Vampire Association has 33 members, and Colorado is home to two vampire groups, House Vespertarian and House Shibboleths. See denver.nightside.org. Colorado boasted three additional vampire houses dating back to the mid-90s, but they are now either defunct or operating under new untracked name. Many more local vampires are thought to not yet be active or awakened, which is just a fancy word for well coming out of the coffin. Okay, I guess we do there. I get what you did there. The puns. But no, Schultz is not about 1500 years old, or superhumanly fast and never once did use the word spider monkey. She eats food and rather enjoys garlic. She can go in the sun, although many vampires are sensitive to intense energy, making extreme changing light, temperatures, and sound uncomfortable. Her heart beats, she does not sparkle, and she's not ice cold. She's human, and she says she was born this way. Sorry, Bella Swan. Most of the vamp community thinks you can't be turned vampire. Being a vampire doesn't make you any more special than being gay or lesbian or queer or engaging in skydiving or being a Buddhist, Salt says, but it doesn't make you any less special either. Modern vampires don't think they're fictional characters with supernatural powers. According to Merticus, his full name, the lead researcher of San Ciencio Enterprises and a founding member of the Atlanta Vampire Alliance, he has been a member of the vampire community since 1997. A real vampire is essentially an energy feeder or blood drinker, explains via email. He doesn't do phone calls or to protect his privacy. While the casualty, interpretation, and sometimes even the proper spelling of vampirism is debated, vampires are generally individuals who cannot adequately sustain their own physical, mental, or spiritual well-being without taking a blood or vital life force energy from other sources, often humans. Vampires break down into three categories, he explains. Psychic or psi, 31%, sanguinarian or blood feeders, 17%, and the hybrid of the two, 2%. He's referencing a survey in 2006 of more than 950 members of the vampire community. One local vampire who declined to use his name after he was interviewed explained the condition as an energy hole. After 1 or 2 weeks without absorbing energy from an outside source, your source becomes to deplete. Local energy workers says they have heard of energy leaks as well as people who drain energy but don't call that vampirism. We don't end at our skin. There's an energy field that we all function in, says David Paskov of Boulder. Has been studying injury healing for 40 years and uses it as a form of body-centered psychotherapy. It sounds like a bunch of hubba-jubba. Hubba-jubba. He sees the injury hole as a type of illness. And if you have an illness, you should get treatment instead of expecting other people to take care of it, he says. Adding that he has never worked with or met anyone who claims to be a vampire. If you got a tumor, you take care of the tumor, Paskov says. If you got an injury hole, you take care of the injury hole. There's all kinds of energy healing that can support that, if you choose to make a change. Plus, it questions the ethics of taking other people's energy, and the safety of freely offering up yours, even if you feel like you have an excess. Sable Schultz has put a lot of thoughts into the ethics of her lifestyle. She says she's practiced awareness and consent, although she does not judge vampires who believe in a more predatory or Dwarven survival philosophy. It's a matter of respect for other people's beliefs and knowledge, Schultz says. And in that, she says, before you get all freaked out and squeamish, realizing that people among us who consume human blood, no, 64% of vampires are women, 66% don't consider themselves gods, some even practice Christianity. Schultz emphasizes that the same vampires she knows, when they come to the relation real lightly. They have done a lot of internal searching, soul searching. They've reflected a great deal on this, she says. All I have attempted to take steps to examine if it's real. Try to rule out everything they wanted to. Schultz considers herself a sort of energy healer, one who cleans up the unneeded energy residue, whether in a nightclub or for her partner. She believes a careful feeding that can not only refuel her, but also clear out energy blocks and hyperactivity that can lead to a lack of focus and anxiety. Some donors told her they feel exhilarated. Others fall asleep for a while. She says it with a chuckle. She knows there will be skeptics. She knows she can't prove it. But even if it's a part of her personality or in her head, she also says that doesn't make it any less real or important to her. All of our perceptions and experiences are in our head, she says. Take someone with synesthesia, a condition where people can see sounds, or take someone who's colorblind, that's how their mind processes reality, solves it. Even if it's just a mental thing, it still has an impact on my life, she says. But what really matters, is how I actually live my life. Whether I live as a person of integrity and honesty.
Okay. If you want to submit your stories or keep updated on upcoming episodes, join the Monster Legends Podcast Facebook group or follow on Twitter at Monster Legends P. Also, if you want to use your email, you may send it to monsterlegendspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you. I'll take a little break. I just want to let you guys know that you can find the Monster Legends Podcast on several platforms, including Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Procast, and Radio Public. So if you're not sure what you're going to get, just get any of those. It'd be great. Or not sure where to find it, that's where you can find them. Thank you. This is from the Only in Your State. Called This Creepy Tale of Vampires in Colorado is Sure to Give You Nightmare by Annie. It was published January 19th, 2008. Since Bram Stoker penned his iconic Dracula in 1897, the world has been fascinated with essentially living corpses who leave their graves in or dark castles at night in search of fresh blood. Like the rest of the world, Coloradoans have long been fascinated with this phenomenon, as demonstrated by the creepy story of the Transylvania vampire. During the early 20th century, Transylvanian immigrant Theodore Fodor Glava worked as a coal miner in Colorado, and like several others, died during the 1918 flu epidemic. While the story of this untimely death is tragic, there was much mystery surrounding Glava, as the tall, pale, and abnormally long fingernailed man was rumored to have actually been a vampire. It can be argued that his ghastly appearance were merely caused by his line of work and illness, but the legend continued to gain traction of a wooden stake that was lodged into Glava's heart after he passed, grew into a giant tree that still sits at the center of his grave. Coincidence? That's for you to decide. Since there are very few pictures available of Glava's grave, found the next best thing, which was that of a video collector. Sorry, person. I made a video. Okay. Here's a next thing. It's not really a monster, but it's interesting. It won't load. Denver, October 28th. Denver Museum of Nature and Science biologist David Stemmen discovered two new species of daddy long legs inside Colorado caves. Yeah, fucking Latin. Scalabonus stemmani, named after Simon, was found in a rocky cave on City of Boulder, open space, and Mountain Park's land. DNA studies show this species evolved for millions of years, while slowly adapting to the underground environment. It is orange and yellow, and is very different looking from the daddy long legs most familiar to people. Simon identified it as a second new species in the Cave of the Winds in Montiel Springs, living deep underground in total darkness. This species was named Scalabrus spioventus, derived from Latin words for cave and wind, and lives in parts of the caves seldom visited by people. Although Cave of Winds has long served as a popular visitor destination in the Pikes Peak region, it is not surprising that new discoveries of life are being made in sections of the cave not open to the public, said Rick Reinhardt, author of the Colorado Caves. Additional studies of caves is critical to better understand our world and the species that live in the unusual place. Okay. So the new species discovered in Colorado. Okay. I can't finally find much on monsters in Colorado, like specific to Colorado, but here's one, like the most famous one that like came up all the time. It's called the Slide Rock Bolter, and I'm reading from the Cryptids Wiki. Slide Rock Bolter, Macrostoma saxiprimptus, it's a bizarre creature, recounted by the lumberjacks of North America during the 19th and early 20th century. It is believed to live in the mountains of Colorado, but this beast only lived in the mountains where the slopes was more than 45 degree angle. It has an immense head, small eyes, and large mouth. It has a fluked tail like a dolphin, with enormous grab hooks. All day long, this creature will just wait for a tourist or helpless creature below it. At the right moment, it will lift its tail, thus loosening its hold on the mountain, and ascend rapidly down the slope with the beast's mouth wide open. It will swallow all that got in its way. Whole parties of tourists are reported to have been gulped up in one scoop by taking the parties far back into the hills. Its body is also so large and strong that trees in its path are broken and destroyed. Its own impetus carries it up the next slope, where it again slaps its tail over the ridge and waits. You son of a bitch. You're gonna ambush that damn spider lives on the ground. Description and signs. In the mountains of Carlisle, where in the summer the woods are becoming infested with tourists, much uneasiness has been caused by the presence of the side rock vulture. This frightful animal lives only in the steepest mountain country where the slopes are greater than 45 degrees. It has an immense head with small eyes and a mouth somewhat on the order of a sculpin, running back beyond its ears. The tail consists of a divided flipper with enormous grab hooks, which it fastens over the crest of the mountain or ridge, often remaining there motionless for days at a time, watching the gulch for tourists or any other hapless creature that may enter it. At the right moment, after sighting a tourist, it will lift its tail, thus losing its hold on the mountain, and with its small eyes riveted on the poor unfortunate and drooling thin-skinned grease from the corners of its mouth, which greatly accelerates its speed. The poulter comes down like a toboggan, scooping its victims as it goes, its only impetus carrying it up the next slope, where it again slaps its tail over the nut ridge and waits. All parties of the caught tourists, why are you fucking repeating yourself, dude? Articles. Animals. The animal is a menace not only to tourists, but to woods as well. Many a draw through spruce-covered slopes has been laid low. The tree has been knocked over by the roots or mowed off by a slice where the vulture has crushed down through the peaks above. A forest ranger whose distinct his district includes the rough country between Ulford Peaks and the Lizard Head concedes the bold idea of destroying a slide rock boulder to its own destruction. A dummy tourist was rigged up with a plaid Norfolk jacket, knee breeches, and a guidebook to Colorado. It was then filled full of giant powder and fumigated caps and posted in a conspicuous place, where sure enough, next day attracted the attention of a boulder which had been hanging for days on the slope of Lizard Head. A rousing explosion flattened half the buildings in Rico, which were never rebuilt, and the surrounding hill flattened flocks of buzzards in the rest of the summer. Like a damn, run with the damn tremors, man. But they're like in the mountains. The Silent Boulder Circle from Wandering Whale Road. You go. Autumn is upon us, and so today we turn to colorful forests of North America. For a story of Stasian folklore, landlocked Colorado is not the first place you think of when it comes to marine mammals. But in the early 20th century, American lumberjacks told of all sorts of stories about fearsome critters. One of them was the Slide Rock Boulder, a terrifying mountain whale. The tale of the Slide Rock Boulder comes to us from William Thomas Cox, a state forester of Minnesota, who in 1910 published Fearsome Critters of the Lumberwoods with a few desert and mountain beasts. In its collection of lumberjack tales from all over the United States, Cox detailed the various creatures that worked in the logging industry. Imagine late at night in their shanties. The Slide Rock Boulder story is set in southwestern Colorado. Cox worked with forester Kiwi Dubois, who drew the illustrations, and botanist George Bishop Stanworth, whose Latino taxonomical name for creature added to the work's tongue-in-cheek imitation of a field guide, the Slide Rock Boulder, Cox writes. Oh, still going. In the mountains of Colorado, where in the summer, the woods are becoming infested with tourists. I read that. Like most creatures, the lumberjacks told stories about the Slide Rock Boulder was probably conjured up late one night as part of a storytelling contest, when seasoned campers competed to convince newcomers that fearsome critters lurked in the woods. Far away from the ocean where any real cetacean would swim, the form of a whale was likely chosen because of its great size and distinctive tail, which suits the peculiar behavior of this particular cryptid. Cox's account goes on to describe how one forest ranger tricked a Slide Rock Boulder into attacking a dummy dressed as a tourist. The bait. A Colorado guidebook and Norfolk jacket common to upperclassmen who could afford to seek adventure in the exotic west. Dummy was stuffed with dynamite, however, and when the boulder slid down Lizard Head for the kill, the resulting explosion flattened half the buildings in Rico, which were never rebuilt. is this store's unusually precise geographic location in Rico Caro that enables up to situate the boulder in a wider context.
Okay, hot in here. Like it.
An investigation into this economic history of Rico reveals the Tlaloc boulder to be a snapshot of the tensions that came at the time of great change in southwestern Colorado. The buildings of Rico were not flattened in an explosion attempt to thwart a monstrous well, but fell into disrepair following a dramatic economic shift that happened in the town shortly before the story of the boulder was recorded. After gold was discovered in the region, American miners started moving in illegally to what has been confirmed as Ute territory by Treaty of 1868. Ute people spent several years trying to protect their lands from invasion by gold-hungry prospectors, but their representative Outre and his wife, were manipulated into seceding 3.7 million acres of land by Felix Brunot, chairman of the Board of Indian Commissioners, who never followed through on his promise to return Outre's captive son in exchange for the American right to mine the San Juan Mountains. Once the Brunot Agreement was signed, American mining operations began in earnest. Rico was one of the towns that popped up and boomed in the 1880s, reaching a population of 5,000 in 1892. The very next year, however, Rico's fortunes turned when a silver panic hit the town. As the prices of silver plummeted, most businesses closed, and by the end of the century, the population has dropped to 811. Rio's prosperity was gone as quickly as it had come. Where the mining decline of another industry immediately eclipsed it, lumber. American violation of the Brunot Agreement broke violent retaliation, which led to the expulsion of the Ute people into Utah in 1881. This left their heavily forested homeland open for exploitation. Forests of southwestern Colorado were felled at first to support the mining industry, but by the time the mines were abandoned, the demand for timber for railroads were high enough that logging remained profitable. The New Mexico Logging Company acquired the cutting rights for the prized western yellow pine that grew in Rico and proceeded to raise the land. The lumberjacks who worked here must have seen the stripes of rumble on the mountainsides that marked the spots of abandoned mines and connected them to Rico's dilapidated buildings, coming up with the story of the Tlaloc boulder displaying the ruination of both landscape and town. But like mining before it, logging in southwestern Colorado suffered a bust as big as its boom. Deforestation was the main culprit. In 1914, the New Mexico Logging Company recruited further south because in one decade they had exhausted the timber supply that had supported Utes for hundreds of years. Unlike the shocking rate of deforestation, the nascent American conservation movement sought to restrict logging in Colorado. So it's perhaps no surprise that the lumberjacks slid Rock Boulder targeted well-to-do East Coast tourists. Lumberjacks of 1910 must have been ecotourists and their conversational agenda as a real threat to their livelihood rather than environmental havoc they themselves were wreaking. Although the story of the Tlaloc boulder was playful, it hints at the tension between lumberjacks and conservationists. Yeah. Caught between the death of mining and the rise of national parks, a story recorded in Fearsome Critters of Lumberwoods captures the fleeting moment of logging supremacy in the history of southwestern Colorado. In fact, it was their transience that prompted Cox to record stories. The lumber regions are contracting stretches of forests that once seemed boundless and are all but gone. In many, a stream is quiet and once ran full of logs and echoed the song of the river driver. Some say that the old type of logger himself is becoming extinct. It is my purpose in this little book to preserve Lake's description and sketch some of the interesting animals which he has originated. Lumberjacks abandoned the Lockside boulder in response to the visible evidence of environmental damage left by the mining industry, unknowingly contributing to the devastation with their own activities. In a few decades, following the treaty, breaking the expulsion of the Ute, who lived sustainably in southwestern Colorado for hundreds of years, the mining and lumber industries managed to bleed the land dry. The man eating mountain whale of lizard head was born of Carl's complicated settlement history and serves as a reminder of how quickly human greed can transform the landscape. A separate thing. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Monsters of the Podcast, Monster Legends of Colorado. Have a great week and be legendary.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. If you want to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.